You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. Brought to you each Thursday at 7 p.m. by Power Rents. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080.
Hoo-wee.
The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. I gotta be honest, Will. This was the first stretch during all of coronavirus this week. I requested today and yesterday. Completely off from the Oregonian. Don't check anything. Don't write anything. Don't make any phone calls. It's finally, and things, individual events have worn on me during the shutdown and the pandemic, but it's just kind of overwhelmed me. The negativity of everything, the seemingly inevitability that sports aren't coming back in the fall, at the very least, not coming back in the traditional sense. And I just needed a break. For a couple days. And I know everybody has their breaking point. For me, it was this last 2 days. I have a almost 2-year-old daughter. She turns 2 next month. She stays home with me. Mom works. At the beginning of quarantine, we could both be at the house and take care of my daughter and kind of get some free time. But my wife's been back to work now for, I don't know, a month, 5
That's
weeks.
Awesome.
That part's good. And I enjoy that I have time with my daughter, but I'm really, really serious about social distancing and staying apart from people. Since mid-March, I run almost every day. I go out and run outside every day, so I do that. I've been to Safeway a number of times to get groceries. I'm kind of the go-to guy for getting our groceries for our family. I've been to Fred Meyer. I went to Dick's to get a pair of running shoes, and I usually go get the takeout, but we don't eat in. That is the extent of all the time I'm out of the house and this radio show. I come in here and get a break and visit with Mike Lynch. I visit with Isaac and Suk. I play ping pong with you in the afternoon. I get in here between like 4 and 4:30 and kind of hang out for a little bit. That's been the extent of everything I've done since mid-March. And since my wife's been back to work for the last month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, I've had the 2-year-old all the time, every day, all the time, other than when I come in here to play ping pong or I go to the grocery store.
Dude, and 2 years old is tough.
At some point, it just wears on you. Have you had your really, truly to the point of being beat down where I'm just like, you know what? I just need to unplug. And I didn't even need to not spend time with my 2-year-old. But anytime I write a story, anytime in the last 3 months that I've had to write a story, my 2-year-old's been in the room. I've had to apologize to head coaches, 4-star recruits, 5-star recruits, 3-star recruits, because she screams into the phone. And while I'm doing the interview, she comes up and screams, or I got to call you back. I've had to deal with that for months now. And I love my daughter dearly. This time is very precious. We've learned she's not even 2. She's learning her colors. She knows animal sounds. We're doing all sorts of educational stuff. But it's honestly starting to feel like a little bit of a grind for the first time where I had to unplug. I had to.
I think everybody did, man. I took 2 days off this past week, Monday and Tuesday, and extended my 4th of July holiday to like 5 days. And that was good, except I didn't really do a lot of relaxing because we actually got into the trap of now my wife and I both work at home. And so we're noticing our house is kind of crappy. And so we just spent 5 days just completely redoing the inside painting, like getting stuff from Wayfair and like putting new furniture up. And
when I think when you have a kid, and it's hard on everybody, and we luckily haven't known anybody who has died or gotten really sick from coronavirus, so that has made it easier.
Yeah.
But I think having a kid that's young that cannot take care of themselves in any capacity, even a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, you can be like, go play video games for a couple hours and you can go do your own thing. And you still need to be in the room or you still need to be in the house and watch them.
Or go outside, go ride your bike or something.
Yeah. Right. 2 years old is like on them all the time. And I'm worn down. I really am. And I feel bad. I've even apologized to my editor at The Oregonian and said, I feel bad. That I'm so this worn down, that I'm this kind of stretched thin. I don't feel like I'm doing my best work, my best version of me as a recruiting journalist right now. I'm still on top of the news. I still know what's going on, and that's all great. And we'll get to some of that today, including will Oregon or can Oregon conceivably sign the number one recruiting class in the nation? I'll explain why there's still room before Oregon really gets into that discussion. That there's a whole nother layer to recruiting before Oregon's there, and I'll explain why. But I wanted to start the show with the genuine, just to the audience, is like, if you're worn down, if you ever feel worn down, I'm with you. And I think sometimes we want to you know, just kind of plug through and keep going and keep churning it out and find a way to keep going. And it is okay to say, I need a timeout. And for me, that was this week. It's funny that for you, it was last week. Because I think people are hitting the fatigue line here recently. I talked to my mom, and my mom said just last week was kind of her breaking point, where she was like, I just need, and they went to a guest house in Leavenworth that a family member of ours owns, just to get a different scenery, just to get a different look, just to have a different outlet, different walls to stare at. I think people are getting to the point of like, this is too much. And I do understand that, and I do understand because people are like that, everybody has their different rationale for things. For some people, it's, I need to unplug for a couple days, and then I'll get back to it. For other people, it's, I need business as usual. And I don't think there's going to be business as usual. I tweeted today, honestly, somewhat flippantly. I didn't say, you know, put any research into it in terms of here's what the OSAA is telling me. It was my own tweet. It was my own thought that I don't think there's going to be an Oregon high school football season across the state. There might be some individual teams that try to scrimmage each other or something, and whether or not that's sanctioned or not is a whole nother thing. But I don't think there's any way. I think it's almost zero. I don't think it's officially zero because they have not said they're not having it. But if we're talking about the fall, a traditional fall high school football season in Oregon is not happening. And I don't think that's controversial. I don't think it's political. I think you look at the numbers going up. Today was an all-time high for number of cases. Yes, testing is going up.
In Oregon.
In Oregon, excuse me, yes. But the percentage of positive tests in Oregon is also going up. This thing is spreading again. Am I crazy to just say, like, no, there hasn't been a formal announcement, but, like, come on here. I mean, there was a travel North Medford baseball team, and they didn't have anybody. I think they all tested before they went. They went to a tournament in Idaho and came back, and Idaho's not a hot spot, and they came back and had multiple team members test positive for coronavirus. It doesn't matter if you go to a densely populated area. It doesn't matter whether you're urban or rural or wherever you live. If you go out and travel and you're in groups, there's a good chance you're going to get it, or certainly a better chance you're going to get it. And I don't think people realize with high school football, people say, well, high school kids aren't even showing symptoms, so they'll be fine. Yeah, but after they go to practice, they go home to their parents. Some of them go home to their grandparents. Some people haven't thought about the fact that coaches are old. There are coaches in this state that are in their 60s and 70s. They can't afford to get it. So as much as we think of well, high school kids aren't real high risk, well, right, but they go home to families. I just don't see any way that there's a football Oregon high school football season this fall, at least not in the traditional sense. Again, there might be scrimmages between individual teams who say, we're just going to do it anyway. I don't know if that'll be outlawed or not, but I just don't see any scenario. Am I crazy? I mean, is it because there are, I think it's split. Some people say, Nimick, you're crazy. We're not there yet. Other people say, well, no, duh. And I don't know.
So here's where I think it's not so much about if they're actually going to cancel the season, because I agree with you. I think it's almost a certainty at this point they are going to cancel the high school fall sports schedule. It will happen. I think what you have to do right now as an organization, as the OSAA, is you have to sit back and really think about a contingency plan of how you are going to, one, communicate this to the community, two, provide some type of leeway or some type of out that you could possibly have if something changes, and three, how you're going to reschedule the season. Because that's what parents are actually going to demand, which is you can't take this season away from my kid. You know, there's certain parents out there that'll say, there's no way you can take this season away from my kid. His college career depends on him playing his senior season and having colleges see him and then offer him scholarships so we don't have to pay for his higher education, because we can't.
Right.
So I think this is a time, and I'm totally with you on it. I think there's no question at this point that if you're having these sports that are basically saying we're done, we're out. I mean, it's getting really close now to this point where, you know, the Big Ten said today and the ACC said today, you know, we're only going to play in conference. Trust me, guys, that's step one. Step two is we're not playing.
Right.
And that's actually going to happen.
And we've seen that across the board. Yeah. You've seen multiple sports writers who cover in different areas in the Big Ten, in the West region, all over say, guys, this is step one to prepare you emotionally for it's not happening.
It's not happening.
They're talking about canceling it everywhere.
They're going to cancel the college football season in Division I sports, and they're going to do it even in the SEC. And the reason that I bring this up, and it's a dose of reality that you have to start living with right now, is if students aren't allowed on campus, that means the athletes are not too. They are called student athletes for a reason, which means they are students first. If they cannot go onto campus as students, they certainly cannot go onto campus as athletes, because that's not their job. Their job, first and foremost, is go to a university and get a higher education. And if they can't do that, there's no point in them getting onto the field and actually playing sports. Now, there's an underlying point, because some of these schools might go bankrupt. But you can't have it both ways.
Well,
and once you do it both ways, by the way, if schools do allow those athletes back onto the field, you got to start paying them then.
And I talked to a Pac-12 assistant coach recently, within the last couple weeks, and he said, we're running up against the fact that we're hearing from our university that we're not maybe going to be allowed to host official visits. And people think recruiting is going to be normal if football's allowed again. Here's the problem with that. If you are on an official visit, your hotel's paid for by the school, your travel expenses are paid for by the school, your meals are paid for by the school, and then, oh yeah, you're on campus. All of those things potentially, and this is what universities are looking into behind the scenes. Does that mean, not if necessarily the kid gets it, but if a parent or a grandparent on an official visit gets coronavirus and is hospitalized, who pays the bill? And already, from a Pac-12 assistant coach, they're starting to hear, we might be liable for this. You're not doing it. Just so you understand, if you guys do have football, you're not going to have recruiting. We are not having 40, 50 kids come to our campus from all over the West region, from Arizona, from Texas, from California, from Florida, to come visit campus, to look at our campus, get sick, and then sue us because we hosted. That potentially could happen if we allowed recruiting visits. When coaches are saying that, and that's one of the big things for football programs, right? They want to have a season, obviously. But if you shut down and say, okay, you guys can have a football season, no conference games. If anybody gets sick, they're out for multiple weeks. If your quarterback room gets sick, and it, by the way, it will be by room because they spend so much time together. That's the other thing people don't get.
If your defense gets sick.
Right. So, okay, we're out for 2 weeks because we all have to quarantine. Okay, we're canceling our next two games. So then suddenly Oregon State finishes 1-3 because they had a year, or they are 3-1 because they had a week where their whole quarterback room was out. So they had to play a running back at quarterback. And then 1 week Cal's defense is out, so they forfeit a game. So Oregon State gets an automatic win there, or potentially there's just no game there. People haven't thought this stuff through, and they act like certain things are controversial with this take. In 4A Oregon football, where they don't have enough kids, if they test kids, if they actually get the testing to the point they can test every kid, and five kids on your football team can't play, you have to forfeit that game. You don't have enough kids to play. And then you can't play for a couple weeks because they have to be cleared. And then no one else can get it, because if they get it, then they have to be out too. We just haven't done the dominoes. It's like, well, you know, there'll be a season because guys could be healthy. It's like, right, but if not, let's just play it out. Let's say USC has five guys on their football team get it, and they have to sit out. Anybody they've been in contact with also can't play for 2 weeks. Well, that's everybody on the football team.
Yeah, that's everybody. That's personnel. That's coaching.
We just don't even look at it that way. And it's like, oh yeah, no duh. There's definitely not going to be a season. We haven't thought about this.
And I think the reason that we probably haven't gone that far into it, and I've brought this up a million times on my Saturday show, because Luke likes to really delve into this and basically go into these ideas and these plans and how they might work. And at the end of the day, when it comes to college athletics, I always just point back to that one singular thing, which is they're students. If they are still students, which you say they are, this is never happening, ever. It's just not happening unless you have all the students back on campus. There's no point. The other alternative, which somebody on the text line 503-250-1080 has said, well, if you pay the athletes, then that doesn't matter. So why don't they?
Right.
I agree. I think that this is your opportunity as a student athlete to basically bargain and basically say, look, am I willing to take a risk to get paid right now to play and potentially get sick?
You mentioned a great point about Oregon high school football, that there are potentially parents who are going to say, high school football is my kid's chance to get seen. A former Oregon Duck wide receiver, Lavoisier Touine, runs a 7-on-7 program and a combine camp, the MVP combine. They're going to try to have a multiple 200 to 300 kid camp in the next 2 weeks in Springfield, Oregon, to showcase these kids, to get measurables, to try to do it in a safe way. We're going to interview him later in the show. But first, I want to get to this because I've seen this as a talking point this week. Oregon has the number one recruiting class in the Pac-12. They're number 5 nationally. And you start to hear people, I've seen it on Rivals, I've seen it on 24/7. Could the Ducks have the number one recruiting class in the nation? Could they actually finish with the number one recruiting class in the nation? Personally, I think the answer is no. Definitely not this year, and there are still a few hurdles to go. I'll explain what those hurdles are next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. So in the past week, I've seen as a talking point whether or not the Oregon Ducks football program could sign the nation's number one recruiting class. I've seen this discussed on Rivals. I've seen it discussed on 24/7, and it has become a talking point across social media. And my short answer here, especially this year, is no. Oregon is not going to end up with the number one recruiting class in the nation. And here's the biggest reason. They only have between 21 and 23 spots for the entire recruiting class. Traditionally, you have 25, and some teams and someone in the top 10 somewhere is going to have, if you have 25 traditionally, they're going to have a heavier year where they have 27 to 28. The margins are thin with these top recruiting classes in the nation, and you have classes like Alabama has every once in a while, and they had one 2 years ago, where they signed 4 5-stars and 21 4-stars. If you take away 4 stars from a recruiting class, 4 4-star prospects, you're going to drop 3 or 4 spots. And Oregon, with only 23 spots to begin with, is basically having those 4 4-star guys taken out from the jump. Oregon has a great recruiting class. It's a phenomenal recruiting class. Number 5 in the nation. They already have 16 commitments. They might only take, at the minimum, 5 more guys, but at the maximum, 7 more guys. This recruiting class is more than 2/3 done. The exciting part about it is you get them in early, you get to feel good about them, and in a year like this where there's a pandemic, you may not get to host official visits, there is no high school football season, you've got guys you feel good about early, and you've addressed your positions of need early. Rivals has listed Oregon's recruiting hall at wide receiver and tight end at number 1 in the nation at both positions. Those were their 2 biggest areas of needs. I would argue that quarterback, no matter who you are, where you are, what position you're in with your football program, quarterback every year is a position of need. You need one every year. Guys, transfer, you have to have a good one. Oregon got themselves the quarterback who was the absolute best it last week, 2 weeks ago, at the Elite 11 camp, which is where all the best quarterbacks in the nation go, in Ty Thompson. You're set at quarterback, you got a great one. You have the number 1 recruiting hall in the nation at wide receiver and tight end. Feel really good about that. That is wonderful. It's wonderful. But when 2/3 of your class is done and you're not considered the favorite for any more 5-star prospects the rest of the way, no. You're not going to end up with the number 1 recruiting class in the nation. Oregon last year signed 3 5-star recruits and on some rankings were not a top 10 class nationally. Think about that. Oregon set a record for them as a football program. Most five stars in a single class, three of them last recruiting cycle, and didn't finish with a top 10 recruiting class according to all the rankings, ESPN, Rivals, and 24/7 Sports. They did it according to some, but they were not a consensus top 10 class. That's the degree of difficulty. In the last 3 years, Georgia has signed 16 five-star prospects. 16! That's the degree of difficulty. That's the level you have to recruit to have the number one recruiting class in the nation. Oregon has jumped to the front of the Pac-12, but the Pac-12 is lagging way behind the rest of the country. And I don't think people fully understand how far back the Pac-12 is in recruiting than the rest of the country. The Pac-12 sometimes only has two, three teams in the top 25. The SEC sometimes has nine in the top 15. It's a different universe. It's a different universe. And Oregon has entered the discussion, and that's wonderful. They've done a remarkable job. Mario Cristobal has done a remarkable job. He's pulling in five-star defensive talents like Justin Flo and Kayvon Thibodeau and Dante Manning out of Missouri. He's landed big-time quarterbacks like Ty Thompson. He landed Troy Franklin, a five-star wide receiver out of California. That's wonderful. Double the number of five stars Oregon has signed in the last 3 years, and you're still halfway to the number of five stars Georgia's pulled in that same amount of time. Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, those four specifically, are almost on a different platform. Clemson wanted Justin Flo to commit. He wouldn't. That he was going to wait longer than they wanted him to. And he was their number one linebacker at that spot on their board. But he wasn't willing to commit. So, and this was late in the early signing period, or right before the early signing period, excuse me, they pivoted and offered a different five-star linebacker, and he committed to Clemson after visiting that next weekend. Their backup plan, their, oh yeah, let's offer this random guy, not random totally, but random for them, let's offer this guy we've never offered before a few days before the early signing period. Their backup guy, their flyer, was a five-star linebacker, and they got him. Oregon, when Oregon gets a five-star right now, it's a recruiting battle, fight to the end. Will they get him? Won't they get him? Oh my gosh, they got him. Imagine if Oregon didn't get Noah Sewell and went, eh, he's not committing soon enough. Let's just offer this other five-star backer, and they just got him. That's the level right now that Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, that's the level Georgia, that's the level those schools are recruiting at. Oregon is climbing. They are unquestionably the number one recruiter in the Pac-12 conference. USC is right there this year. If we rewind to December, they finished 12th out of 12 Pac-12 teams. So I'm not really willing to say they fully cleared that hurdle. I'm not really fully willing to say, yeah, they're definitely number one right there with Oregon. They finished last in December. So to say now they're number one ahead of Oregon, who was first then and first now, seems silly. Oregon is the premier recruiter in the Pac-12, but the Pac-12 has had years where total in the whole conference, in the entire conference, they've signed two five-star prospects. There are years where the SEC signs 20 or just below 20. We're just talking about different things, and I don't think people fully understand that yet. And I appreciate the enthusiasm. I really, covering recruiting, it fills me with joy to hear people talk about Oregon as the number one recruiter in the nation, because it gives me something to cover. It means I'm covering something exciting. It means I'm covering something that's going well. Oregon State's doing better. Oregon's doing so much better. They're in the discussion for the number one recruiting class in the nation. That's wonderful for my beat, but it's also my job to be a realist. And when Georgia signs 7 5-stars in a year, when Alabama has a year where they have the number one recruiting class and they sign 4 5-stars and 21 four-star prospects, I have to say, let's pump the brakes a little bit on Oregon having the number one recruiting class, especially this year. They have 16 guys. They might sign 7 more, but let's give them as high as we can give them. Let's map it out very quickly. If Ty Thompson jumps all the way up to a 5-star, which he could on Rivals, Oregon's in the mix for 5-star offensive lineman Bryce Foster. Let's give it to him. They're in the mix for Kingsley Suamataia. Let's give him to him. He's a top 60 recruit in the nation. He's not a five-star, but he's a high four-star. Let's give Oregon one of the two of Corey Foreman, the number one recruit in the entire country, a defensive end. He put Oregon recently in his top seven just yesterday. Or JT Tuimoloau, who's the number one defensive tackle in the country. Oregon is not considered a favorite for either Corey Foreman or JT Tuimoloau. Tack with it, just for fun. Give them both to Oregon. I still think that isn't enough. That's three more five-star defensive line, two defensive linemen, two five-star defensive linemen, a five-star offensive lineman, and a top 60 offensive lineman. That's four more top 60 guys, three of them five stars, and it still probably isn't enough to be number one because they might only sign 22 or 23 guys this year. Let's pump the brakes. I know it's exciting. Oregon, number one recruiting class of the Pac-12. Oregon, top 10 recruiting class of the Pac-12. Before Mario Cristobal was the head coach, Oregon had never signed the number one recruiting class of the Pac-12. They're on pace to do it for a third year in a row. It's remarkable. It's remarkable. They're trending towards being the type of program that competes for number one, the number one recruiting class in the nation. They're not there yet. We have a Pac-12 perspective. If you want to talk number one in the nation, take a step back. Look at Alabama's results, look at Georgia's results, look at Ohio State's results, and understand that when Clemson misses on a five-star guy like Justin Flo, they go, eh, he didn't decide in enough time. Let's just offer somebody else and get him. And that guy ends up being a five-star guy and committing less than a week later, you're on a different level. And right now, frankly, Oregon is just a step below that. It's very positive, but they're a step below that. I want to get to, and we talked about it in the first segment, it is so hard right now because I think the Oregon high school football season might get canceled. I mean, Will and I both agree we think it's getting canceled. Or at least postponed to the spring, but it's not going to be a traditional high school football season in the fall. So there are so many kids who don't have an outlet to get the exposure they need to potentially get a college scholarship. MVP owner, 7-on-7 owner, Lavoisier 2NA wants to change that. He's trying to hold a combine this month for 200 to 300 athletes from the Northwest. We'll ask him about the difficulties of that, how realistic he thinks it is that it's going to happen, and about his 7-on-7 team's championship win in Las Vegas here earlier this month. We'll discuss that and more. Lavoisier 2NA next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. I really feel for guys who are about to be high school seniors, who are trying to go into the fall specifically to get exposure, to get a scholarship to pay for college. There aren't a lot of avenues to get that exposure if your senior season is canceled. A guy trying to fix that is MVP owner Lavoisier 2NA. He has a 7-on-7 team. They recently won the Pylon Championship in Vegas. And on July 18th, he's trying to hold a combine for Oregon and Washington athletes, Northwest athletes, to try to get them some exposure. Lavoisier 2NA also, by the way, the offensive player of the game in the 2012 Rose Bowl. He joins me now. Lavoisier, thank you for joining the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Now, see, I did not remember that you never in your career had a 100-yard game. I think your record was something like 90 yards. Going into that Rose Bowl, and then you had like 158 and two scores. What in the world happened, and how good is it to have that kind of performance on a big stage like that?
Man, it was great, but you just have to bring up that stat, though.
So, no, I mean, no, the last stat's good, man. I mean, you were a good football player. Yeah, I remember I remember you,
Dorian. We have some good running backs, so you know what we have to do as receivers. But to be able to come out there and play my last game, man, it was amazing. You know what I mean? Like, I went out there, and I was ready to perform. And it was funny. Me and Josh Huff were talking about it the night before. And we're like, one of us is going to win the MVP, man. One of us. And lucky enough, man, I was able to win it after the game.
Speaking of winning, MVP 7-on-7 went down to Pylon in Las Vegas here recently to compete in a tournament. It's normally a national championship type tournament. Something like 116 teams are there. This year was a condensed version, 16 teams, but the local team from Oregon, the MVP team, took home the trophy. You guys had a player actually tragically pass away. He was on a hike on a cliff and fell into the ocean and passed, Ian Spaulding of North Bend. What did it mean to your program to win that championship, not only for the exposure, but also to win one for Ian, a guy who was a real valued member of your team and your program?
Man, it was honestly, it was a blessing for us to win that for him. All of our kids, They went there with one mission, man, and to win the whole thing for Ian. I was lucky enough to have some great coaches, Matt Quinn, Brendan Quinn, and Malik Boynton, to be able to go out there and lead our team to a victory, you know what I mean? So it was their guidance and the kids just playing for Ian, just having that momentum for the kids, man. It was great.
For you, I know that 7-on-7 tournament, it's nice to bring home a trophy, but as important is the potential exposure for your kids. I want to give that to Oregon athletes as much as possible. Your quarterback's a known commodity. He's Oregon State quarterback commit Sam Vidlak. I want to know what you think of Sam, but who stood out on your 7-on-7 team that helped bring home the trophy? Give us a rundown of some of your top players to give them an opportunity to get some coverage, to get an idea potentially of where you could see them fitting in the college spectrum. NAIA all the way up to potentially, Power 5 conference type prospects.
Oh, wow. All right. We can start with the offense. Sam was probably one of the top quarterbacks in the state. He actually showed his worth is probably more than going to Oregon State as well. So, I'm glad he was able to shine even more at that tournament. We had Noga there as one of the receivers. He also plays at Valley with Sam. We had Hagen Stevenson, who plays at Marist. Jake Newell, he goes to Thurston. He's a big tight end. He's up and coming. And, just all around on the defense as well. Hagen played both ways. He was a corner. We had Dawson Davis. We had Lawrence playing corner. Our linebacker stepped up. Bryce Endell, he played middle backer. We had Devin Brad, who plays outside backer and running back down there for Medford. But we had a lot of kids who were able to step up during the tournament and help us win. I mean, it was great to see our team coming together as one. And actually understanding what it takes to win a championship and to be on the same level in every aspect of the game.
We're talking to MVP owner Lavoisier Tuinei, former Oregon star receiver, the offensive player of the game for the 2012 Rose Bowl, 158 yards receiving, 2 touchdowns. He's also, and the reason we're having him on the air, his 7-on-7 team went down to Pylon in Vegas. They won a 16-team tournament and a championship. Also, he is having a combine event July 18th for... So I want to ask you this. You're having this at Springfield, Oregon at Les Schwab Sports Park, July 18th. You're breaking it into positions, right? O-line, D-line, then a second session later in the day, more afternoon, running backs, linebackers, DBs, and then another session for quarterbacks, receivers, tight end. How many people are going to this event, and how do you see this playing out in terms of what you can and cannot do? Because the restrictions are pretty serious right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty serious, but we're able to take every precaution with this. We hired a registered nurse who works at Riverbend Hospital out here in Eugene. She's actually helping us out with figuring out how we can make this safe for every kid and having all the parents on the same page on this. So we have around 300 kids who are attending this, about 100 per each group. We're only allowed 100 kids on the field at a time, so we're going to be able to break that up to 50 kids at a time. And we're going to teach social distancing. We're going to have the kids wear masks. There will be hand sanitation stations at every testing drill. And then we're going to have someone who's going to have a monitor for social distancing.
What are you going to test specifically? So if I'm a high school kid and I want to go to this event, obviously there's going to be, if you're social distancing, there can't be like O-line, D-line, one-on-one. So what can I do? Are you guys going to have like an official 40 that you can, an away station, a height station, so at least you guys can get like college measurements out there to colleges? What are you going to try to do to make sure that each kid when they go there is kind of getting the bang for their buck from an exposure standpoint? Again, is it an official time thing or is it a showcase event? How are you going to do that?
All right, so as soon as they check in, right when they come in, we're going to have them step on the scale. We're going to get their weight. Then we're going to get their height. Then we're going to get their wingspan. Then they're going to step to the next station. We're going to get their hand size, right? So we're going to get all the measurements on that level. And then when they go into the testing drills, we're doing a laser 40, and it's a hand laser. So this is probably the best laser gates that you can possibly get for testing the 40. Then we're going to do hand times for the shuttle, the L drill. We have a vertical jump that we're going to also be testing. And it's not like a jumping pad. This one's it's a belt with a chip that you will use. And it's the same equipment that the U.S. volleyball team uses. All right. So it doesn't just only tell you their vertical, but it tells you how much force they're putting into the jumping and how much they're landing with. We're doing a power ball throw test and then the broad jump. All right. And then, but the most exciting part about this whole thing is the position drills. After we test, right, after you show your speed, your quickness and all that, we're going to put it to work on the football field, and we're going to be able to film all the athletes just so they can show colleges how well they can move, how well they can cut, how, like an O-line, D-lineman, how well they can get up and down and move side to side, lateral, how powerful they are moving forward with their punch, all that type of stuff. And I think that's what's going to make a difference at this combine.
It's so tough. In the time I've covered Oregon high school football, the biggest thing and the toughest part of it is for Oregon athletes, you almost have to prove it either through official times to prove your athleticism, or you need to participate in tournaments or events or showcases outside of the state. Because the biggest complaint I get from college coaches, if I talk to them about a kid, is he looks wonderful on film. I can't tell totally how fast he is. I can't tell how strong he is or athletic he is because I don't know the level of competition. I imagine the point of getting some of those measurements is to at least take that complaint, that concern, off the table for some of these athletes, because the reality is you can't control in-pad events, but you can control getting them those official times that potentially lead to a scholarship.
No, 100%. And that's the main point. And then that's good that you brought that up. This is a potential. This is to help you just to be able to get noticed. You know what I mean? When it all comes down to like, how well can you play on the field? But this right here is a great potential to be able to get you a scholarship to a D1, D2, D3. And we also have Brendan Huffman, who's coming down, who's going to be there, also checking hand times, doing it himself, watching all the athletes. So, you can't get any better than that. You know what I mean? The main guy who's going to be able to give you the future or not. You know what I mean?
So if I devil's advocate for a second, what if somebody says, okay, what happens if a kid gets coronavirus? How do you deal with the liability concerns of potentially a couple of athletes getting coronavirus and getting sick, or their parents getting sick after they are, they get it and are asymptomatic? Are you concerned at all potentially about liability issues with this event?
No, not really, because we have all our bases covered. We'll have every parent and kid sign a waiver form. They will also, the waiver form is also for the company that we're renting from, that we'll have to sign for too. We have our bases covered. We're also going to be checking temperatures when each kid checks in. No parents are allowed to spectate, so only the athletes who are participating are allowed in, and then the staff, of course.
Perfect. Lavoisier Tounet, thank you very much, man. I did want to ask you that. I didn't want to just give you a free pass, but I really hope this, I really want it to work, because these kids deserve an opportunity to showcase what they can do. And so much of their future lies in how they perform in the spring and summer, and it's been taken from them. And I really hope this event works and leads to potentially some scholarship opportunities. Thank you very much for joining the show. I really appreciate it. And thank you for saving your best for last. We're the home of the Ducks. We appreciate you saving your best for last and helping Oregon win that Rose Bowl.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. One more thing, though. I did this combine for Oregon athletes. It got bigger than I thought it would be, but this is for all the Oregon athletes here, all right?
All right, thank you. All right, man. Have a good one.
You too.
I hope that event happens. I think people think when I tweet that there's not going to be, or I say there's not going to be an Oregon high school football season, that I'm rooting for that. I'm definitely not. I'm not rooting for that to happen. I want there to be a season. I want this combine to go smoothly and for it to lead to opportunities, because there are some really wonderful kids and some really wonderful stories in the state of Oregon. We'll wrap up the show, Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, next on Tending the Fan. Couple of commitments coming up here in the next 2 days. So I might as well tell you where everybody's going. Right? That's my job.
I think that's like 90% of your job.
Yeah. Xavier Worthy, arguably the fastest high school football player in America. He is the fastest track athlete in the state of California. So if you're the fastest track athlete in the state of California as a sophomore, I'm going to go ahead and say you're probably the fastest receiver in the country. I mean, I think that's fairly safe to say. He is committing tomorrow. Oregon was the favorite when he originally announced his commitment date, but he originally announced his commitment date several weeks ago. He pushed it back, which allowed, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, Michigan to jump into the front spot. Xavier Worthy, I believe, is going to pick Michigan tomorrow. Keanu Williams, the four-star defensive lineman, the nation's number 21 defensive end. I don't think he's going to play defensive end in college. He's 6'5", 290 pounds. They'll bulk him up. I bet he's 6'5", 320 before he sees the field. He is committing Saturday. Oregon, Stanford, and others are his finalists. I think it's going to be Oregon, Duck fans. I think you're going to have another one in the bag. Keanu Williams, I predict, will pick Oregon on Saturday so that Oregon keeps it rolling week in, week out. I think it's 9 weeks in a row they've landed a four-star prospect or better. Pretty impressive run here by the Ducks. Thank you, as always, for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.